This is 10 Radio, community radio for the 10 parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web at 10radio.org. 10 Radio.
Good morning, 10 Parish Radio listeners. I'm Jo Elliott, and I'm really proud to introduce a new programme called Farming Life. The idea of this programme is to just give out information about the farming world, and we can cover all sorts of topics. But today we're starting off with probably quite a controversial subject, bovine TB. This is instigated by the fact that the government are doing a consultation and they want comments in by the 8th of December. But I had to start somewhere, so I'm starting with this subject. I'm a farmer. We farm a family farm outside Wiverliscombe. I have also lived and worked in the city and abroad, so I hope I can give a balanced point of view to things. And joining me this morning, I have Dave Lewis, a farmer from Bowden Farm, and he's going to help me tell the stories of farmers that have had TB and what it's meant to them. Then we'll be talking to John Cohen, who's a vet and TB expert of many years, a retired vet. Is that right, John? A retired vet. And he can give us an outline of the disease, how it affects badgers, how the disease is spread, things like that. And then we have Leisha Schneider. I think you will know her from the Somerset Wildlife Trust. You've been with us on 10 Radio quite a lot, I'm told, Lisa. Right, okay, I think that's it. But this is my first time on the radio, so to catch my breath, I'm going to ask Julian, who's with us doing the deck, if he can play us Vivaldi. We thought we'd go for winter, because it's very apt on this snowy day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Farming Life. Ooh, this is exciting. Okay, we're going to introduce Dave. Welcome, morning. Dave, to the show. Morning. Perhaps you could tell the listeners your story of your experience with TB and any other farmers' stories that you've acquired.
Right, good morning. I bought Bowden Farm just over 40 years ago, and at that time there was a lot of hedges. I took out some hedges. I like wildlife. I've left at least a quarter of an acre on one of the slopes that is full of badger holes. And we've always had a lot of good badgers. We've had people come over, sit down and watch them. But unfortunately, recently, the badger situation and cattle situation and deer and llamas and a lot of other things have got TB badly. Now, I think we need to sit down and not say we are for this or for that. We need to sit down and try to work out what is the best way forward generally for wildlife.
Yeah.
We run a Jersey pedigree herd for a long time up to the year 2000. Touch wood, which is only touch wood, we were always healthy stock. So I've had no problems with any badgers there. Unfortunately, when we sold them, we bought in some Herefords, and we have to say that we did have TB the following year on a couple of the Herefords. I cannot say for definitely whether it was brought in or there. I would not question that, but they had it. They were taken away when they had calves at 3 months old. We had to rear the calves by hand then. They were told they won't take the calf. The calf, this is another question I will ask both wives here, the calf was born out of the calf, so it had all its blood down there. She was slobbered all over with her breath, everything with the calf. She milked off the mother. And that animal is still going now, and it's never
actually... It didn't have TB.
So this, I would like to find out, when we talk about animal to animal and cow to cow, why the mother never passed this on to the daughter. We had two that was like that.
Right.
The financial situation is chronic for dairies. And for all farming, it's chronic. Because when you have TB, even if you don't have the animal, but it's doubtful, and I must say, I don't believe the test is 100% accurate, exactly is what we've got, but not 100%. We are closed down. If you're a situation like some of the people up on the moors that actually do suckler cows and sell their calves in the autumn because they have not the buildings to feed, they are stuck. At the moment, we are rearing ourselves pedigree Jerseys. If we go down, we can't sell anything, even if we've only got doubtfuls. And this is the financial problem with the dairy herds, beef herds at the moment. It is all put on to the farmer to work out, and you are closed down completely.
Right, thank you. I have some other stories. We couldn't bring every farmer that has a story into the studio, so I've had permission to tell stories if I've spoken to the person and they've given me permission to relate their stories. So I've got Viv Selleck from Escott Farm, Willerton. Now, he went down with TB quite some time ago, 8 years. He has a pedigree herd of Charolais beef animals. Now, the main market for Charolais bulls is Scotland, and he has said that they have not taken animals to Scotland for the last 8 years because Scotland do not want to know any animal that has come from the southwest because it is such a hot TB area. So this man's business is affected quite seriously. He also has had an example of animals that cannot go into the meat market because they are under retention, withdrawal. This is when an animal has been treated, say, for worms, given a bolus or an injection. The meat is deemed unsafe for a certain amount of time. The TB test has to be done. The animal is in withdrawal. It cannot go to the abattoir. He knows that they come and are shot on the farm. He was really upset about this and kicked up a fuss, and he got the vets in the end to come and sedate the animals. He pulled the health and safety thing and said he didn't want to be responsible for any damage that had happened while dealing with scared stock. But that distressed him. Now, you know, that's his story, and he felt very strongly that that shouldn't happen. He also felt very strongly that it was a badger disease, and he wanted me to emphasise that he thinks that it is the badgers that are spreading the disease, and you know, we have to listen to everybody's point of view, so I am stating that that's what he feels very strongly. He also had an example of a closed herd in the Porlock area. Can't mention name or farm because I actually haven't spoken to the person myself, but that closed herd. And Dave, perhaps you could explain to the listeners, you know, we farmers, what is a closed herd?
A closed herd is basically, over the years, the person has been able to breed what he needs to breed and not buy in any new stock.
Right.
So there's no stock coming from any other farm. So the animals have been bred on the farm and have lived their life on the farm, so have kept there.
Right. So my farm, we have a closed herd, don't buy anything in. So there's the question of, you know, is it transmitted by bought-in animals? And this farm lost 50% of their herd when they went down with TB. So that is quite devastating. Then we have John Hawkins from Stigumba. He has had TB for the last 12 months, but fortunately has gone clear in the last 10 days. Hooray. But all his neighbours have it in the Stigumba area, and he considers himself to be in what we call a hot spot area. And his main concern was the loss of breeding stock. And he fears that the national beef herd will be in decline. We won't have enough beef to feed ourselves. And this was one of his main concerns. He has seen poorly badgers come into the straw barns for warmth. They look emaciated, they look ill. And he has witnessed badgers coming in, especially in this cold weather, they come in to the straw barns for warmth. Jeff Jones farms at Richmond Farm, at North Hill, just outside of Wiveliscombe. And 4 years ago, he had a pedigree dairy herd of 150 cows. He went down with TB, and within 6 months he lost 50 cows. This proved a catalyst for him for going out of dairy. He had spent 25 years building up his herd, and at 50-something he did not feel that it was realistic to begin again. He thought of carrying on with 100 cows, but it proved uneconomic, so he came out of dairying. He then took up rearing in-calf heifers for a neighbouring farmer. Dave, what would be the point of rearing in-calf heifers for another dairy farm?
The point would be the dairy farm itself has not got facilities to rear the young stock. So you'd actually take the young stock from an early age, rear them up, get them in calved, and as soon as they've calved, which is what we're doing in some ways, is then to put back into the herd that they come from.
Yeah.
And then it would not be a lot of big movement. It would only be from one herd to the next herd, which really should make it a lot more beneficial.
Right. But this,
I'd like to come on with something else, yeah, if I can, Joan, on this badger thing. Because we're in pedigree jerseys, we know all the pedigree things. And this is someone in Devon, Carol Pledge, that used to live here at one time. She went out one day in the spring, about 4 years ago, and there was a badger just crawling. There were two jerseys that were sniffing it and rolling it and everything else like that. Naturally, she put in her diary about it. The following winter, when she had her test, those two were the only two in the herd that actually went down with TB.
Ah,
the other
right.
ones were clear, but they actually... Now, I don't know what you presume from that, but it was, she felt very strongly that it's not necessarily the badger when they're walking around and urinating, but it's when they're really ill and they're going over, they're then the most dangerous to give. And a natural thing for a cow, if you've got something like a dog or anything, if it's ill and can't move, they're going to play with it.
Well, they're curious animals, aren't they? They will check anything out that comes into their environment. Oh, thank you for that. So that does emphasise the feeling that badgers have transmitted the disease. So going back to Jeff's story, he then took up rearing in-calf heifers for a neighbouring dairy farmer, and he's gone down with TB again. So not only now, because of movement restrictions, he can't give those animals back to the dairy farmer. He doesn't have the facilities to deal with them if they calve on his farm, because they need milking. As we know, when a cow calves, it needs milking. So there's double distress. Both him and the neighbouring farmer are severely disrupted because of the TB. So that's thank you, Geoffrey, for letting us tell you that story. And then I have a story from Mr. and Mrs. Martin, that farm at Den Hill Farm, Chipstable, and they went down with TB, and as a result they lost their spring calvers. Now, Dave, can you help explain to the listeners why spring calving in this part of the world is so important?
Well, basically, we're very well off with grass normally, not necessarily this year, because we've had a very dry year, but we got grass, and when the cows eat the grass, they will produce milk after they've calved down. So the idea is to calve down fairly early, then the calf is there, she goes out with her mother on the grass produces more milk, the cow takes more milk and puts more weight, and they grow good and healthy, because they're outside all the time, they've got a good life.
Yeah, and then the nutrition in the grass goes
feeds
down
the mother to the milk, which then comes in, and also the cow will have a bit of grass, but that will produce the milk, because the difference between a beef herd and a dairy herd, a lot of times you get so much milk off of the grass, but you have to feed more concentrates to get more milk. But a beef animal will produce the right amount of milk for the calf it's got to make it grow well.
But the level of nutrition in grass decreases throughout the year, and by autumn you might have grass, but it doesn't have the same value. And if you're calving in the autumn, you've got a completely different scenario, haven't you?
Well, you also got that the grass is getting less, but you ain't going to get no grass today. So if you've got a calf on a cow, you actually end up on silage or something, which will not produce the milk. So you have to then, if you're going to do it, it's going to cost you a lot of money to buy in cake to feed, which is defeats the process. And at the end of the day, everybody here and everything, it's got to make money. We've got to live. And the farmers are the same. They have to make money. Well, if they're paying out too much money,
it's uneconomic, isn't it?
Economics go, you go bust. And where would the countryside be without everybody?
Well, going back to John Hawkins' concern, that the decline in the whole national beef herd. And then they also had a bull that was taken as a reactor, and on the abattoir report came back that it didn't have any lesions. So Mr. and Mrs. Martin were very distressed, that they felt that the animal had been killed needlessly, and they were very concerned that the testing isn't that accurate. And that's another point I have come across from farmers. You've got the whole business of the, you get false positives and positive and false negatives. It can be
Well, I think it's recognised that it's not 100% correct. At the moment, it's the only test we've got, and I don't believe there's anything in process to try to spend money on to get it better. So we are stuck with what we've got, and whatever happens, we have to abide by the law on that testing.
Yes, so there we have a sample of the stories and problems that have been caused by TB. And I leave it to, you know, we're just offering information. And I think now that we'll have a track, please, Julian, and we'll have a break. And after the break, we come back and we're going to be talking to John Cohen, a vet that resided here, up at down Brown Lane?
Brown Lane.
Yes, and some of you know him. He probably visited various farms as a vet. But he's going to tell us more about the TB situation in cattle. So when we return, we'll be talking to John. Thank you, Julian.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway, saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling. The voice was chanting as the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, the dust clouds rolling, the voice coming chanting, and the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me.
Welcome back, 10 Radio listeners. We're on the Farming Life programme, and we've had a discussion about the farmer's point of view, and now I would like to introduce John. Welcome, John, to the programme. He came all the way from Chard over sheet ice. So, yes, welcome to the programme. And perhaps you could explain to the listeners your expertise. You know, thank you.
Well, I joined what was MAF in 1975 and very rapidly got involved with a big TB breakdown on the Isle of Purbeck. Since then, I've been very involved with it. It became my lead subject, and I've stuck with it all my working life since then.
Which, and how many years would that be, just out of curiosity?
Nearly 30.
30 years. Right.
And I got active experience of the wildlife aspect of it during a period when I was doing an MSc working in the Veterinary Investigation Centre in Gloucester with the original people that discovered the infection in the wildlife.
Oh, right. So I think well qualified to comment on this subject. So perhaps, John, you'd like to start by giving us an outline of the disease itself.
Well, TB is a very difficult disease and a fascinating disease. It has no timeline, unlike most other diseases where you have a fairly fixed period from infection to clinical signs. TB doesn't. It can range from a very short period to a lifetime. So it all depends on that. The initial infection may be no more than a pinhead in the animal, or with whether that be a man or a cow or a badger. It can stay like that for a long time. But eventually, due to age, nutritional stress, whatever, that will break down. It will then spread through the animal, affecting the lungs, the liver, the kidneys, most of the subject of the animal's organs and eventually kill it. It is still the biggest single infectious disease of killer of people in the world,
yeah,
with the possible exception today of malaria.
Goodness. Yes, so that highlights why we really do need to do something about it. On that point, what is the risk of humans catching TB from
cattle?
Yeah.
It's quite low at present because we pasteurise milk. In the 1930s, in the interwar period, there were at least 5,000 new cases of TB infection in humans derived directly from infected milk. That would lead to the introduction of pasteurisation and has managed to more or less separate disease in cattle from disease in people.
Yeah.
It still does occur and the potential is still there. Bovine TB is a killer of people if it gets into people.
Right, so
it's still very difficult to treat.
This is this highlights why something,
yes,
has to be done about it. And so now, would you like to tell us how you think cattle catch the disease from badgers?
Well, historically, again, according to the report by Sir Zolly Zuckerman, in the immediate post-war period, there was about 40% of cattle herds were infected. Up to one in four cattle were infected. The major route of transmission in those days was undoubtedly cattle-to-cattle transmission.
Right.
That led to the introduction of the TB testing order, and as a result of that, by tracing animals backwards and forwards for the origin infection, the level of infection in cattle was reduced to, in 1969, less than 0.01% of reactors. That 0.1% consisted virtually entirely of but four small hotspot areas: Cornwall, Cornwood, Gloucester around Thornbury, and a small part of Dorset.
Right. So, what's happened now? Why have we got this huge spread
of
the disease?
Well, unfortunately, the thought was the Cornish farmers were bad farmers. That's why they were still maintaining the infection. Until in 1968, up in Thornbury, Roger Gallagher, who was a veterinary officer up in Gloucester, was on a farm, and a farmer said, "That's what's causing my TB," and pointed to a dead badger. Well, we all thought, nonsense, you know. But he picked it up, took it back, and to everyone's utter astonishment, that badger had died of bovine TB, massive infection. And since then, it has become clear that the badger is a wildlife reservoir for the disease. It's also an unusual animal in that it can carry much heavier levels of infection than any other mammal that we know, which makes it highly infectious, unfortunately.
Yes, I was led to believe that it excretes the disease
more
than any other wildlife animal, or any other animal for that fact.
Well, when we're looking at badgers for postmortems, we have to use a full bioprotection system to protect the operators from potential infection. They are the level of infection they carry is immense. And unfortunately, there is a spillover from them into the cattle. And we've heard the stories of the closed herds. There was another story on the Isle of Purbeck where over a period of 3 years, a large number of cattle were removed from from one farm. The badger set was, and it was one of the first that this happened to, the badger set was cleared. It was unusual and it was virtually an island. And since then, there have been no more breakdowns.
since the badgers were
removed.
And the badgers have
also recolonised the area with clean badgers. So we now have a situation there where we have clean badgers running around with clean cattle and no problems.
Which is the optimum.
Which is the ideal.
We need. We need healthy badgers and healthy cows,
yes,
don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
So, did you have a story for us at Holes?
Yes, I do. Another
of
one
farms.
That is within my personal knowledge. So, this isn't. I can swear to it in court if necessary.
Yeah.
big farmer ran a big pedigree herd of milking cows, Friesian Holsteins, closed herd, never bought any stock in for the last 10, living memory virtually.
Mm.
But he was constantly going down with TB. He unfortunately was taken out with foot and mouth, and the entire herd was slaughtered.
Right.
And the buildings, everything, cleansed, scrubbed, every bit of possible source of infection was removed. He bought a lock, stock and barrel, complete herd from Hampshire that had never had even so much as a doubtful reactor. And that again was a totally closed herd. He moved that to his farm at Putford. Within 6 months he had reactors and later confirmed disease. No cattle contacts were to there at all. That was must have come from wildlife.
Yes, yes. So there's no evidence that cows break down, they've got the TB and then because of numbers they become stressed and then the disease manifests itself.
No, not. You have to have the disease in the first place there.
Right.
It doesn't manifest itself out of the miasma.
Right, thank you. I think that establishes that fact well. Now, have you anything else you'd like to add while you have this opportunity, John?
Well, when we talk about the TB test, and there is this problem of animals that react to the test and we come back as no visible lesion, in other words, which is unconfirmed.
Mr. and Mrs. Martin's
concern. It gives people the impression that the test is inaccurate. When we do a post-mortem on a cow, we can be looking for a lesion that's small, a size of a pinhead.
Yeah.
Now I have once, and again I have found pinhead-sized lesions by luck in cattle and confirmed disease in them. This is early disease. If my knife cut had been a fraction of one way, a fraction the other, I would have missed it, and it would have been declared and non-confirmed.
Right.
Somerset had, in 1990, 91 and 92, out of all cattle tested on all of Somerset, there were 10 animals that reacted.
10?
Yes.
10?
Merely 10. And of those 10, none were confirmed. And I think that represents the false positive rate of the TB test, because at that stage, there was no TB in Somerset. Unfortunately, that's changed.
Yes, tell us about it. So, well, there you go, listeners. That's quite a comprehensive account of the disease. And thank you, John, because at no point... We actually didn't use the word cull, because,
no.
I said, this programme, we're not out to we want to offer information and we need to arrive at some kind of satisfactory solution.
Can I just follow on from there is that one, I've been into dealing with farms, and this is what all my colleagues have tried to do as well, is that where you have a farm where there has been no breakdown and they've asked what to do about their badgers, our advice has always been, if you have no breakdowns, hang on to your badgers.
Yes,
they
yes.
will keep
yeah.
infected yeah. ones off. So we are not advocating wholesale slaughter of them.
Of the badgers, no. And can I use this opportunity to say that the government consultation is suggesting that in an area of culling that they propose, that up to 70% of the farmers would have to agree to their badgers being culled, but 30% within the hotspot area would not need to take out healthy badgers. And I had a farmer who was very against the cull for the very reason that you've just said. If you've got healthy badgers, you do not want to disturb them in any way, because they're living with the animals, and we, on our farm, fortunately, have got clear badgers. But I went to an NFU meeting about this subject about a fortnight ago, and was told not if I get TB, but when. And this was personally quite distressing. But good. So you are advocating that you don't move clear sets. We
absolutely
don't want an outright slaughter. We don't want
no,
to
if we're going to do a cull, it has to, it'll only be effective if it is done with driven by medicine, not by by emotion, not by politics.
Yes. Well, I think this point we'll come to when we speak to Lisa. I think vaccination is probably the answer. But I think thank you, John. I think you've given us some invaluable information, and I would like now to ask Julian to play us another. Yes. Track, which is from Oklahoma, because the theme, some of this music is a theme. We are of the land, we love the land, and we're connected to the land, we work on the land in farming life. And so after the record we'll be talking to Lisa Snyder. I think some of you will have heard her speak before. She's a regular member on Radio 10 Radio, I'm told. So enjoy this, and we'll talk to Lisa when we return. Thank you.
They couldn't pick a better time to start in life.
It ain't too early and it ain't too late.
Starting as a farmer with a brand new wife.
Soon be living in a brand new state.
Brand new state. Gonna treat you great.
Gonna give you barley, carrots and potatoes.
Pasture for the cattle,
spinach and tomatoes.
Flowers on the prairie where the June bugs zoom. Plenty of air and plenty of room.
Plenty of room to swing a rope.
Plenty of heart and plenty of hope.
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain. Oklahoma, every night my honey lamb and I sit alone and talk and watch a hawk making lazy circles in the sky. We know we belong to the land, and the land we belong to is grand. And when we say,
no!
I hit my OEA, we're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.
Thank you.
land we belong to is grand. I love the land. That's why I'm a farmer. Welcome back to Farming Life on 10 Radio on this lovely, lovely, sunny, snowy day. And thanks to John Cohen for his information. And now we're going to move on to Lisa Snyder. Morning, Lisa.
Hello.
Welcome. And thanks for coming in. And we would like to give you the opportunity to offer information from your point of view. Go for it.
Thank you. There's an awful lot to talk about
right.
here.
I'm going to give you about 2 minutes.
Okay? 2 minutes to say everything.
That's right.
First of all, to say about Somerset Wildlife Trust,
yeah.
Who I work for, and we are not only a wildlife conservation organisation, we are a substantial land manager in our own right. We manage over 80 nature reserves all over Somerset, and we have got restrictions on one of those sites at the minute because of BTB and the herd of cattle that we run there. So we've got direct first-hand experience of the problems and of the testing and the issues and inadequacies of that and the issues around that. And farming is absolutely essential for our wildlife and the future of our wildlife across England. It is very, very important we put that point across because sometimes, I think particularly in the media, it's pitched that farming and conservation are at opposite ends.
Yes,
they're
a war
not.
Going on, isn't there?
Absolutely
yeah.
not. We need farming.
Thank you.
And, you know, there is so much good work that farmers do out there for conservation
Hooray.
That needs to be shouted about more. Yeah. And it would be a tremendous shame if an issue like this got in the way of all the good work that's going on out there. So I just wanted to make that point.
Thank you.
The next point is that the Wildlife Trusts, and that's all 47 Wildlife Trusts across the UK, it's not just Somerset, we all believe that we've got to sort out the BTB issue. It is a major, major issue for farming and it has to be eradicated. And it's interesting, we've looked right the way back over the time that was spoken about earlier when BTB did get down to that 0.01%.
Mm.
And it's a great shame that when that happened, everybody did get, you know, the authorities certainly did get a little bit complacent and the restrictions were lifted for a while and foot and mouth came on and animal movement changed. And these things have also contributed to us getting back to where we are. But we have to sort it out. It is a major issue, and obviously it's a major issue for conservation as well as farming. Just a little bit about badgers. Now, badgers obviously are an integral part of our native fauna, and the populations of badgers in the southwest, as in the rest of England, there is quite a healthy population of badgers in the southwest. There's been substantial legislation to protect badgers now for many years. It was all brought together under the Badgers Act in 1992, and that was really done for animal welfare reasons. There's been a lot of cruelty to badgers in the past, badger digging, badger baiting, snaring, gassing, you name it.
Mm.
And that legislation has had a slight impact on the badger population, but the badger population is really, it's not increasing exponentially in the southwest or in Somerset. It is relatively stable, and badgers are relatively stable animals in all respects. They live in stable populations, in sets, in family groups, in social groups, and quite a lot of what we're looking at with dealing with the issue with badgers and BTB has to look very carefully at the science and the ecology of the animals themselves if we're going to do anything useful. Now, we as a Wildlife Trust, we're very keen that we base our policy on science. We are not a badger-hugging organisation for the sake of it. You know, we are very intent on solving this problem. And there can be transfer of BTB from badgers to cattle. Now, Lord Krebs, who has been leading a major piece of scientific work on this for well over 10 years now, he said, I think it was on a little competitor radio station called Radio 4 a few weeks back.
One of those, yeah.
One of those. He said very clearly that badger to cattle transfer of BTB is only thought to account for about 20% of bovine tuberculosis cases. Now that's quite controversial. There's
mm-hmm.
other figures out there that other people would talk about, but the main point here is that badger to cattle transfer does happen, but it is not the whole picture. And we believe very strongly that we need to look at that, but we need to look at all the other things that can be done right the way across the farming sector to try to tackle BTB on all fronts. And I think it would be doing a disservice to farmers if the government only looked at the badger issue, if that is only a percentage of the cases of BTB cause, then it makes sense to look at everything. Now, There's a lot of science behind this now. It's still not adequate to inform everybody's views and everybody's needs, but there's been a lot of research going on over the last 10 to 15 years since the incident that you spoke about earlier in 68, when the first incidence of BTB in a badger was found, on not only how this thing happens within the badger population, but how that may be controlled as part of the big picture. And there was a big trial went on called the Krebs trial, the random... randomised badger culling trial, where a number of areas were chosen, and there was a very systematic trial cull under licence, because obviously it's illegal to kill badgers, but there was a trial cull of badgers done in these areas, and very, very close analysis, scientific analysis done, of how the incidence of BTB in cattle correlated with those particular culls. Now, it's very, very difficult, if you were of mind to, it's very difficult to actually get rid of all badgers in any one area. And that's because of a number of different factors. First of all, the landowning pattern and the land management pattern in any one area is tremendously complicated. You know, we get members turning us, they've got badgers digging up their lawn, or there's badgers in woodlands, or there's badgers in a lot of different areas. And they live in sets, they live underground. The most effective way of culling them is to trap them and shoot them very close range. That is the most effective way to control badgers if you're of a mind to do so. But no matter how much concentrated effort you pour in, I think about £50 million went into this scientific trial over the period, a lot of taxpayers' money. No matter what you do, you'll never get them all. So there is always going to be some incidents there, or some potential there for there to be some reservoir in the population. That's just a practical point. Now, what the randomised badger culling trial found was that quite a lot of badgers were killed, but around the edges of a cull area, they found that the incidence of BTB could actually go up. Right. Now, that's quite counterintuitive, isn't it? You'd think, well, if you kill badgers, the disease is going to go down. The problem is that if you kill only a certain number of badgers in an area, but not all of them, you're going to actually, it's a little bit like chucking a bomb into the middle of a population. They're going to start moving around more. And it's actually disrupting the whole social structure of the badger population. So if you're increasing movement in the badger population, what you'll also do is increase the potential for BTB to be passed around.
The government suggests that this perturbation that you're referring to, they would vaccinate in a ring around the culled, proposed culled areas to stop exactly what you're talking
about.
That's
part of the government proposals. Yes. And I should just point out here that the new coalition government have put forward, in the consultation that's out at the minute, they've put forward proposals that there should be a badger cull, and that should be done over areas of no less than 150 kilometres squared, and within that, no less than 70% of the area should be culled. But I'll come to that in a moment, because this big badger culling trial that was done is the best science that we've got. It's you know, there's been a lot of other stuff that's gone on, but it is the best science that we've got. And that, the results of that trial, together with a lot of other research, were put forward to a thing called the Independent Scientific Group on Badgers and Bovine Tuberculosis that was called by the last government, the Labour government. And the Independent Scientific Group did a very, very rigorous study of all the different things that could be done to help control BTB, whether that be cattle things or badger things. In fact, the ISG's report, I've got a copy of it here, it's pretty chunky, about half of that concentrated on badgers and half of that concentrated on cattle measures. Now, the ISG reported in 2007, and it concluded very strongly that it didn't think that culling of badgers could be an effective contribution towards BTB control. It made a huge number of recommendations on things that could be done, from vaccination right the way through to cattle movement controls and all kinds of other things. But it concluded, partly because of the perturbation effect that we've talked about, and partly because of the actual practicalities of achieving a cull and the costs of that, it didn't recommend that a cull was an appropriate way forward. Now, the Labour government, don't want to politicise this, but the Labour government said, OK, we're listening to that, we don't think a cull should go ahead, but we think there need to be a number of other measures in place. The new government have a different view. What they have done, and you could say this is true coalition style, is to say, well, we think there should be a cull, but we're going to get the farmers to do it. We're going to get the big society approach here, and we're actually going to get the farmers to carry the cost of a cull. Now, our major concern with that is even when you chuck £50 million at a study lasting 10 years with systematic, continuous trapping of badgers, you can't get all the badgers, and the actual usefulness of a cull is questionable. If you actually then license farmers and landowners to do that cull, it's going to be less and less and less efficient. And the less efficient a cull is in any area, the more risk there is of not actually, you know, improving the TB situation, but the more risk there is of making the situation worse by actually having the perturbation effect within the cull area and getting more and more diseased badgers moving around. So our concern is that the current proposals are actually potentially going to make the whole matter worse, and that's the last thing we would want to see.
Right. That's really quite interesting because I believe, John, would you like to come back on that? I could see you sort of jumping up and down.
Jump in, first of all, with this question of the vaccination? To date, over the last 15 years, millions of pounds have been spent on trying to develop a better vaccine than BCG for the human population. This work has been done with both on the veterinary labs and the medical labs internationally. Due to the nature of the parasite and the way it avoids the immune system in the host, to date we still have no better vaccine than BCG, which at the very best only achieves 80% protection. Its normal protection level is way below that. Getting back now onto the various reports, unfortunately the only person who seemed to understand the relationship between the parasite and the environment was Sir Zolly Zuckerman, who did the original report. The second report done by Professor Dunnett recommended the partial culling because he said that within 3 years there would be a reliable test for TB in the live badger. That was 20 years ago.
Right.
We still don't have this. And that's again because of the nature of the way the parasite and the host react. As far as Krebs is concerned, and the independent scientific group, well, they're about as independent as the bankers.
I'm not sure. I think it's a very good read.
You've had your say. I'll have mine. The Krebs report and the trials that you referred to are so flawed that they mean virtually nothing.
Well, in what way flawed, John?
Well, the first trial done where they were removing all the badgers, they didn't cull during the spring when the sows were lactating. They only achieved something in the region of 50% cull. Ranging up to 70. Other places it was way below that. The area involved, 10 by 10 kilometres, is really a small area. It is true that the incidence of TB outside that area increased at the time of the trial, but subsequent follow-up has shown that there was a fall in TB both outside and has been maintained a fall within the area. This was published by a recent study. I forget which new university did it, but it was quite a recent one. I agree with when we say we want healthy badgers, and I also agree that if we don't do a cull properly and systematically, it will make the situation worse. But I think when we talk about so much work and the scientific work on the ISG, I think it's too flawed.
So we have, with the question of vaccination, to be an answer. It's easy to get the cattle through the crush and give them an injection. We do it for blue tongue. It would be ideal. Why haven't we got a vaccination? Why haven't any government put money into developing a vaccination?
That's what I'm saying. They have. millions of pounds have been spent over the last 20 odd years.
But you're saying because of the nature of the,
yes,
of the bug.
If there was a vaccine, it would be being used. It would be being used both in for humans and for cattle.
Right.
And hopefully badgers. But
Lisa, can I just come in here? Yes. First of all, to say that no solution is going to be perfect. I accept what you say about the effectiveness of a vaccine, but a vaccine is more effective than no vaccine by a significant degree. And a vaccine for badgers, an injectable vaccine for badgers, was actually approved in July of this year.
July
of this year. It's pretty new stuff, and there is some research behind it. But you know, there could be an argument in the short term, because we need short-term solutions to this we can do now, and we need longer-term solutions as well. And there could be an argument short-term that you've rightly said the government have proposed vaccination around the edges of cull areas, that vaccination could be proposed as a viable alternative, because long-term or longer-term, any cull vaccination is going to take years to have a proper effect, but the vaccination wouldn't produce a perturbation effect. Now, longer term, cattle vaccine, there's two main blocks to that. One is that you can't distinguish between, when you test, between a cow that has been vaccinated and a cow that's got BTB. So that test needs to be refined. And the second problem is that Europe do not currently allow vaccinated cattle into the food chain.
Mm.
And
right.
So there would need to be a change to legislation.
Okay, unfortunately we're running out of time. And Lisa, I think you wanted to mention that the Southwest have... There's a Southwest TB Farm Advisory Service to deal with. Yes,
this is a really, really important point, because one of the other things, and this is very difficult for farmers who are currently under so many restrictions already with BTB, but biosecurity measures, keep those badgers out of your sheds.
Mm.
These basic things that can be done to help prevent BTB. And farmers need support, and they need resources, and they need real incentives to be able to put forward some of these measures. There is an advisory service that is being promoted by number of farming organisations,
and this one is EU funded, because we've run out of time, folks. I'm going to hand you over to Julian, who's been working the deck, and he's going to do some information. Thank you Lisa, Dave and John. Excellent. We can do this again, because we haven't covered all of it, and maybe we can join together again. Okay, thank you people.
Right, this show will be repeated on Sunday at 8 o'clock in the morning and Wednesday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and it will be going out live every month from now on, which is 12 o'clock noon on the first Friday of each month. And if you do want to get in touch with the Southwest Farm Advisory Service, then their website is www.southwest-tbadvice.co.uk, and you can email them from there, and their phone number is also on their website. So thank you very much for listening. Well done, Joe. Fantastic first effort. No, not finished yet.
No, I mean, are we playing music?
We are, yes. But I'm just saying, well done.
Oh,
fantastic
right,
first show.
Oh, well, no, thank you, people. That was excellent. There's so much we could have talked about, John. We could have... thank you. And Dave was...
Okay, this is Ed and Ginger.
Right.
We get up in the morn and we sound the harvest horn. Our master has orders for to mind. First thing we take in hand is the stopper from the can, so each man may drink until the bottom he finds. Well then each man may do his part and may work with hand and heart, while the glorious sun do shine, while the glorious sun do shine. Our master brings the can, oh he's a jolly hearted man.
Come
on me lads and take a drop of the best. But don't you stand and prattle when you hear the wagons rattle, for the sun he is a drawing to the west, for the sun he is a drawing to the west. Oh it's the farmer's daughter dear, brews us plenty of strong beer.